of what you value as film, as opposed to, for example, working in digital video. But when we had this conversation with Getty, you characterized, you summed it up as something I think very interesting. You were talking about it as medium resistance.
Yeah.
Because the specifics of whether you prefer this about film or that about digital video is irrelevant. What's relevant is that means something to you and it informs your work. Mm-hmm. And I had never thought about it in those terms, but medium resistance is absolutely a vital factor when you talk about any kind of filmmaking, commercial filmmaking like I do, because that absolutely informs your process. That delay, that watching dailies a day later, absolutely informs the way you direct the film. Shooting, I mean, the section we were looking at of Interstellar was shot with IMAX camera, enormously big and heavy and cumbersome, and the magazines don't take much film time-wise, you know, all the rest, and that completely informed the way in which we blocked and shot the film. And I never really thought about it in those terms, and you know, I'm never going to go into the head of the studio's office and talk about, well, I need the medium resistance, you know. but the truth is, it's a very powerful factor, and I never really thought about it in those terms at all. It was very interesting to think about. I thought that even more than what the specifics of that are for you, whether it's the delay particularly or whatever, but it informs all filmmaking, and it also informs the history of filmmaking. So if you look at narrative fiction in cinema, you see the way it changes, and you look at silent film and the way in which they move the camera and so forth, and then sound comes in and the camera stops moving because they had to put it in a big box so it can record sound, and then it gradually gets mobile again, and then three-strip Technicolor comes along and it grinds to a halt because it's too big once again, and so forth. You know, these kind of resistances of the medium, as you put it, they really do inform the way in which films are made in very important ways, and I think that any filmmaker is doing is dealing with that in the best way possible, trying to use what's difficult about it for something positive.
Can I ask you about that choice that you've made with Interstellar that we just saw? Because you're choosing to be, I generally don't know, you should in what looks like a very confined real space with handheld, presumably. What was going on there? You made these choices. Tell us a bit about the filmic quality that you think is there that you wouldn't have gone with digital.
Well, I mean, in terms of how we shot it, yeah, we were in very cramped spaces using a very large camera. My DP, Hoyte van Hoytema, at the beginning of the shoot, was determined to show that he could handhold an IMAX camera, which I, having done two films on IMAX before, I said, it's absolutely impossible. We tried it. It was on the Steadicam, but on the dark night, near the beginning, we actually broke the Steadicam because the camera was so heavy, it literally sheared the arm off. And then Hoyte, I don't know, he's just a big, strong Dutch boy. I mean, he just grabbed it and stuck it on his shoulder. And he'd run around with his camera. So great. And when we started shooting on the spaceship sets, which we deliberately built small and cramped and complete, so we weren't flying walls. I mean, they were real environments. So what we were seeing out the window was really there and you know, all the rest. At first, he was a little resistant to try and jam that camera in there. But we started working it in more and more. What it means is that the choice of camera angles, for example, is very much predicated on where you can sort of jam the camera in. But what it pushed us towards that I really enjoyed was in doing a science fiction film, we wanted it to feel very credible to the audience. And so those limitations, I think subliminally for the audience, they're seeing a film that's being shot in the way you would really have to shoot it if you were in those cramped environments and so forth. So it's sort of subtleties like that. But as far as film specifically, and everything, knowing how the film stock is going to react to a particular light and so forth, there's a lot of effort that's gone into where there are visual effects, trying to get the appropriate dynamic range into the lighting. It's one of the hardest things for the visual effects guys to do because the range of film from the brightest and darkest is absolutely enormous. I mean, they try to quantify it, saying 16 stops, this, that, the other. The digital camera, they talk about how many stops in range. At the end of the day, it's not really about that. It's about what does it look like if you get tremendously bright light shining through the window of a spaceship or something. It has a particular quality to it. When you try and do that in computer graphics or whatever, it's very difficult to get. get as extreme as those things are. And so what we did is, you know, where there's an explosion, you know, outside the window or something, we would use the light and just film the light at the appropriate brightness, the appropriate luminance, so then the visual effects does would match to that. So
itself is giving a sense of realism, even though you're in another galaxy in some fantastical world, but it feels real, it feels that we're there, which Blade Runner does with a used reality idea. But it's like using film to do that.
Well, I think film, you know, what I love about film as opposed to video, and it is generally as opposed to it, I mean, it's a choice you make, but my you know, need to use films and love for film is that it's tactile quality, because of any imaging medium, it's the one that most can make you feel like you know, taste like. You know, it's sort of got that connection with your other senses, because it imitates or provides an analogy for the way the eye sees in the most effective way possible. And it's very interesting if you look at, you know, people's reactions to high frame rate films, for example, when you go 48 frames or 60 frames. Any time you sort of tamper with that mechanism that film has for doing that, it can really throw people. And sometimes people use that to great effect, and there are filmmakers who love doing that and will do that. But how precise the 24 frames a second, you know, celluloid version of our imaging technology, it's got a very, very strong and great relationship with the way the eye sees.
So the 48 frames per second digital world is not for you?
Well, it's not digital. I mean, it was done on film first, and Douglas Trumbull did show scan at 60 frames, you know, using 65mm and 70mm stocks, you know, back in the late 60s. And we actually, when we were doing Inception, we experimented with 70mm 48 frames per second format. And what we found is you solve some where you have images, you know, crossing the screen rapidly, but you create all kinds of other artifacts because you don't get the appropriate motion blur that your eye sees, because your eye sees with motion blur. You know, if you waggle your fingers, you see this blurring. And so you start to lose that when you have more than 24 frames a second. It's one of those peculiarities.
That's what I'm saying. You don't want that clarity. I mean, I was making a joke to you the other day about, you know, fish, flowers and football. It's what, whenever you get demonstrations of those 4K, 8K tellies, it's always fish and flowers. I mean,
yeah.
Which is fine, to be really clear. For you.
Well, but what has to be understood about that is, especially if you look at big close-ups of people's faces, there is myth that you know, has become very much conventional wisdom that if you shoot that digitally, you will see more detail. So people will say, oh, we're shooting on digital, so the makeup has to be better, you know, because you'll see all this extra detail. If you shoot on film or projector film, you will see far more. It has a higher resolution, it has more detail. What happens with that is because ultimately it's binary, and you know, something is either registering on or off, you get artificial edge sharpening. So you get defects in the skin and so forth that are lifted forward in the image. The point being, you're exaggerating certain details. And that gives the impression when we look at the image of going, oh, there's all this detail in there. But it's not where your eye would see it. And the thing that film has evolved to do over the 100 years it's been there, and digital is undergoing its own evolution in parallel with that now, and ahead of that now, is to see it. And it's a pretty narrow bandwidth. You know, there's a pretty specific set of characteristics that seem to be very comfortable for people in terms of imitating the way the eye sees. But one of the more interesting components of that, that I was just talking to Walter Murch at the end of that discussion we were talking about, because he said this beautiful thing that I absolutely love, where he says if you shoot an empty room, there's an empty room with a chair in it and an open door, you shoot it on film and you shoot it on video, when you watch it on film, you feel like somebody, when you watch it on video, you feel like somebody's just left. I said to Walter, I had first heard that, you know, somebody, he said it in the meeting this morning, but I'd heard that secondhand some months ago, and I thought, God, that's absolutely true. Why is that? I spent a lot of time thinking about it. And the answer came to me when I was watching Chris Marker's La Jetée, which is, for those who don't know, it's made of stills. It's photographic stills. And I suddenly realized you can't do that digitally. And Chris Marker worked wonderfully on digital as well. But that film's because of the analog grain structure, it's always moving. There's an absolute difference in projected film between a still that's been filmed and when the projector jams and stops. You know, free-